Off the Ball.
GAA.
I always feel like the best players were able to grab a game by the scruff of the neck when an opportunity kind of presented itself. Great players and great teams were able to kind of seize that moment.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
There's a stylish range of Renault SUV hybrids, including the Austral, Captur and Symbios. Packed full of really innovative and intuitive tech designed to enhance your driving, it can give up to 1,100 kilometres in range from a full tank, run on purely electric up to 80% of the time in urban areas, and has all of the latest safety features, including pedestrian and cyclist recognition. Great acceleration thanks to the hybrid powertrain. Hey Google, directions to the Dexcom Stadium. On this episode of Backseat Pundits, I was joined by former Connacht and Ireland fullback Gavin Duffy to look back at Ireland's shaky win over Italy and to look ahead to the England clash this weekend in Twickenham. Okay, Gavin Duffy, we're here down in Galway, taking the drive to the Dexcom Stadium. I know obviously you spend a lot of time there now in a more professional capacity, but does the drive still bring up some good memories going back to that stadium?
Yeah, it really does. Whether it's now currently in my role as a coach in player development, or whether it was in commercial, or whether it was as a player, there's always a level of excitement when you're going through the gates, because there's always something different, particularly recently now, obviously, with the opening of the new facilities and the High Performance Centre. And but it does bring back great memories, particularly on a Friday night when you're kind of coming across town. You can see the floodlights, it's probably in the highest point of the town that can be seen from everywhere. No matter if it was a tough point of the season and we'd won a few games, or whatever way the season had been going when you were a player, you always thought, right, something cool could happen tonight when we're up there on a Friday night. So yeah, it's always something I don't take for granted, for sure, and definitely with the new facilities, it's the novelty hasn't worn off there.
Yeah, what was that night like when Leinster came down with the new stand opening and such buzz around the city, I can imagine?
I think the riding word perhaps of the evening was emotional. For myself in particular, and personally, like, it was when the two teams came out into the pitch and the fireworks went off and the music was blaring, and just the scene of the colour, the noise, the amount of people were in the ground that night, I actually was lost for words.
Yeah.
But when I met other past players and people who'd been involved in the club over the last 20, 30 years, and I asked them, that was a pretty cool moment, was it? And they were like, yeah, I actually felt a little bit emotional, and there were a few tears coming down their eyes. And talking to other people as well and who had been involved over the last number of years, and they looked to their left and right and they saw their kids crying, because they knew it meant so much.
Yeah.
Either to their parents or to whoever had been involved. And I think we feel very fortunate that we have now got to the place where we have such facilities, but we won't forget the amount of hard work and graft that went into getting them there as well.
Yeah. On the flip side then, obviously not to be too negative, but then watching maybe this week with Italy, it struck me that there wasn't a Connacht name in that match day 23. I mean, that's obviously through nobody's fault of their own, and we'll get to that, of maybe was it harsh on Keane Prendergast from the France game, that kind of thing. But is that difficult for supporters and people watching on from Connacht to not see someone from their kind of area, or do you think they support the obviously they support Ireland, sorry,
yeah,
that's not the question, but like, is it difficult maybe?
Look, I think it's just one moment and one game. Yeah. at the time, I thought if we were to delve in a little bit deeper on the Keane Prendergast maybe non-selection against Italy, I was amazed he was taken off at half time against France. I thought all his involvements against France were positive, whether that was as an option, as a line-up jumper, whether it was being really disruptive through the defensive maul against France, whether it was through some of his carries, some of his defensive hits, breakdown work. I was really surprised he was taken off at half-time. And I was a bit surprised he wasn't involved against Italy. But I'm also thinking, well, maybe he did take his chance in the first 40 minutes. Maybe he was one of the guys that stood up and could be rewarded against England this weekend, for example, rather than going maybe back-to-back-to-back in three games in a row, which is a big ask for all the players involved. I thought maybe someone like Keane Prendergast can have a bit of hope that he will be involved in some way this weekend.
I feel like there's almost two camps at the moment. There's kind of people saying that we're on the decline and we've lost too much experience, not just from injuries, but maybe out the door, just retirements in the past couple of years. and that we are on a downward trajectory. And then there's people, and obviously Farrell would say this himself, that we need to go through a little bit of pain right now, and we need the maybe the people with, you know, 5 to 10 caps to have those big pressure moments in order to come out the other side and be ready for the likes of a World Cup. So would you be in that latter camp more, do you think?
Yeah, I'm probably a glass half full kind of mentality myself. So I do think we're in a bit of transition, and I think history would show us that, you know, when we have got to a World Cup, that we didn't quite have the depth to play big matches back to back to back. So I definitely think that we are in transition. I don't think it's a decline necessarily, because we haven't got a full hand to pick from at the moment. Like, there's guys there, Mac Hansen, Hugh O'Keenan, who I think is an incredible fullback. Like, they are world class and they are game changers. And you could argue that sometimes in their absence over the last 6-7 months, well, Mac played obviously during the Autumn Internationals, but in the games that they don't play, we do lack a little bit of X factor. And they certainly bring that, those two guys, particularly in the back three. So all of a sudden now you have Rob Balakoon, who played really well at the weekend. James Lowe, back to a level of performance last Saturday that was as good as anything he'd done previously. And then I thought Jamie Osborne as well, a full back, didn't put a foot wrong. So all of a sudden now you have 5, 6, 7 players in that conversation for the back three, whereas previously, you know, you might have been just stuck on three players in particular.
Yeah.
So out of all this pain, perhaps, there's goodness to come.
Some people probably were dropped, as harsh of a word it is to use. I mean, James Lowe, for example, was maybe dropped for the Paris game, but then we saw what that did for him.
Yeah.
Coming back, and he had all the intent of the world, it felt like, and that made a difference on the pitch. Likes of Josh van der Vlier obviously haven't played against, or didn't play, sorry, played in Paris, then didn't play against Italy. Do you think there's kind of merit in that, in when the intent is an issue? I hate to use the word again, but yeah, when that emotion is an issue, as we saw in Paris, just reminding guys that, you know, your position isn't as safe as maybe you thought it was. Do you think that is beneficial, I suppose?
100%. I think there has to be some level of discomfort around your selection, almost. Doesn't necessarily have to be there every week, but on the back of a poor performance like that, there has to be some sort of level of, when you're going in on a Tuesday going, I'm not sure if my name's going to be read out here or not. And again, how you react to that when your name is read or your name isn't read out, I think, you know, will determine how long you stay in the squad as well, long term, because the coach will see that on a Tuesday and a Wednesday, Thursday, in terms of how does this guy react to this information that he's just been given. Is he still good around the squad? Does he still train well on a Thursday, Friday? And is he still in the mindset that, you know, even on a Saturday morning, if he gets called up, he's prepared? And that's difficult to do. I was in that position so many times during Six Nations, where you go up and down the road from Galway to Dublin and you're told on a Tuesday you're not needed, and you still have to come back up on a Thursday and pretend you're the French fullback or the Italian fullback. And by week 5 and week 6, that could be particularly a hard thing to do. But there does need to be that understanding of, you know, you will get a couple of chances here, but there's a line being drawn at some stage as well, where we need to make changes for the betterment of the team.
Mm. How did you feel the Italy game went? I think there's a, coming out of it in the media, there's maybe a sense of, okay, we got the win, but it wasn't maybe the full response we were looking for.
First and foremost, I really enjoyed the game watching it. I thought it was an entertaining game.
Yeah, no, it was.
Which, you know, when you're taking 2 and 2.5 hours out of your day and, you know, putting your feet up and watching it and saying, all right, I'm out of commission here, there's nothing else going on for the next 2 hours, 4 hours it was, because you want to watch the Scotland and England game. You want to be entertained as well. You want to watch a good game that's competitive, and we certainly got that. The weather definitely helped compared to the weekend before in Paris, yeah, and in Rome. So we got to see a lot more of the attacking structure of the two teams. Ireland definitely wanted to play a bit more. Like, they were trying to get 2-3 passes away from the ruck. And I thought some of the shape was quite good at times. Other times, perhaps, when the shape was good, they just couldn't get the pass away, or they didn't have the confidence to go to extra pass that maybe would have got them to a bit more open space. But I thought there was an intent there that perhaps was lacking from an attacking perspective, not necessarily kind of the physical aspect of it, but to play on the front foot, not just to get to the halfway line, pull up the handbrake, right, we're all going to box kick here and we're going to chase. which was great to see from an entertainment perspective as well. So I thought that was a positive. I thought the willingness to offload again, Stuart McCluskey, James Lowe, certainly a positive on the wing. Anytime he got the ball, he took two, three guys to take him down, kept the ball alive through an offload. So there was loads of positives, I thought, in the attack. The balance for them to strike now against England at the weekend will be, when they do attack like that, is when they do kick, can they get a collective line chase, an aggressive line chase? Because I thought at times when they did kick on the back of playing three, four phases, they didn't quite get that line chase. And Italy were good enough to pick off a few holes there and build a few phases on the back of that. And Ireland looked like they were scrambling at times. The positives again, some of the ball, early collisions in the air, Balakoon and James Lowe got them back. Again, the line it was okay, shaky once or twice, but in the whole it was okay. Defensively, they had to go through a lot of phases,
especially at the end.
At the end, and like they held firm.
Yeah,
like they got the job done, and I think that was the biggest aspect of it, was they found a way at the end to get the job done. There was some commentary afterwards, perhaps, that Ireland got lucky, but you know, after 20 minutes, they had 75% of possession, 80% territory. After 60 minutes, they had 9 entries into the Italian 22. Italy only had 6. Italy, I felt, were only going to really score if they got penalties and got into Ireland's 22. Now, they had the one brilliant try marked off through the forward pass to Lina, which came off, again, another really long kick to touch. Didn't quite get the line chase up, and they played a couple of phases from left and then went back right. But I felt outside of that, God, I'm backtracking here now, because I know they had the little chip kick as well they could have scored off when I think of it. But I felt it was going to take probably a maul or a really kind of close range try for Italy to get a score at the end.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel Ireland were lucky. I felt overall they probably deserved it. And if they're honest with themselves, I think the opportunity to get the bonus point at the end will probably irk them this week, that given the way the championship was going, if England could maybe, you know, slip up against us as well, but also beat France, those bonus points at the end could be the difference between first, second, or second and third.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say Jack Rowley was fuming at himself for that last kick, even though he had a, as we all saw, he had a fantastic game when he came on, but I'd say that was really annoying not to be able to kind of finish off a great performance with another good moment. But I don't want to talk about it too much, because obviously the comments have come out this morning. I don't know if you read them from Andy Farrell, just around all the talk around the 10 situation in Ireland and how damaging that has been to two young players. So it feels so wrong to go and talk about it again, but I mean, it's hard not to when you look at the game, where maybe I don't think Sam Prendergast particularly had an awful game. I think there were moments of really good, as he often has, moments of brilliance, and then moments where I think it was confidence more than anything. His head, yeah, just felt like it dropped. What did you make of his game, I suppose, first, and then we'll kind of come on to the whole 10 situation in a second?
Again, I thought Ireland set up in a different way than they did against France, and I thought it was going to suit Sam in terms of getting on the front foot, getting that 2-3 passes away from the ruck, him being in the kind of the pivot position out the back of the forwards. But there was times where, again, it just looked like there was a lack of confidence or a lack of clarity around, well, is he going to go to line or is he going to give the ball early? And I think that maybe put a little bit of doubt into the forwards as well as to how to play off him. Because he is so creative and he can leave it till the very last second to make a decision, and he's arguably one of the best we have in Ireland in terms of waiting for a gap or a dog leg to appear, and then he'll either give a short or over the top. But again, that comes on the back of the team being developed in a way that they get to play those combinations a little bit more, and you know, there's been a lot of injuries, as we mentioned, and there's been guys in and out of form, so it's not always going to be perfect. And I think in the wider context of that whole debate, like, if we're waiting for either of those two players to be perfect, like, we're never going to get there.
Yeah.
Like, there's too much pressure on them to be absolutely perfect. I don't think there's an expectation on any other player on the pitch to be perfect. So why are we putting so much pressure on these two players at such a young age and a moment in their careers where they're really trying to get to the next level, and we're expecting them to be perfect? It's just that is not going to be the case. We should be focusing on all the things that they're really good at and asking them to double down on that, but also going, oh, he's class because he can do that, and he's class because he can do that, and they both bring different aspects to their game, and when they're on the pitch, let's see them bring those out, as opposed to at the moment it feels like every single time they go out into the pitch, people are waiting for an opportunity to go, oh well, A would have done better than B in that situation. Mm. Oh no, B's better than A in that situation. And it's you can go back and forth in that, and you'll never find a solution as to who should be your best 10. It's let's see who can do more of the good things more regularly.
I was in the stadium, and when Jack Crowley came on, it actually broke my heart a little bit. The cheer for him is fantastic, and the confidence that gave him to go out and play the way he did in the last 30 minutes of the game. But it does, you just can't imagine how Sam is feeling when he's leaving, probably not having had his best game ever. And then it's not a boo, but it almost feels like a boo in a weird kind of reverse way. Is this almost going close to too far at this stage? I mean, the way Farrell spoke when I read his comments about breaking young players, and like, I think for him that must hit really hard as well, because he watched his son go through a similar situation, not similar, it hasn't reached that level yet, but you know, a situation in England where as Irish people I think we would have looked at it and been like, God, that's crazy, how could you do that to one of your players? And now we're looking at Sam, and I'm starting to think, are we going down a dangerous path of a similar route to that, do you think?
In a way, yeah. And it's crazy how people get so entrenched in their view as well, in terms of, well, I'm right because I back player A and you're wrong because you don't back him. And again, like, there'll be moments and times where Jack Crowley is playing better than Sam Prendergast, so let's pick him. Mm-hmm. And but also to say, well, if the game needs to be changed up, we've got, player B is in the background waiting to come on. When he comes on, then let's see what he can do.
Yeah.
Rather than, as always been, has to be black and white, but he's better than him. It wouldn't be brilliant if both of them got to their level and it just became another, oh, he's picked this weekend or he's picked that weekend. It's not, every weekend it feels like it's, this is the final say. This is going to determine who's our best 10. Like, these guys are so young that we could be playing for the next 8, 9, 10 years that, it'd be sickening if we're still having that conversation. And it's not fair then on the next group of 10s coming through either, like a Harry Byrne. Why can't he be given his chance? And why can't he be in the conversation if he's playing well enough? Like, well, in he goes. Like, if he's playing well enough, in he goes. And it shouldn't be a defining moment in their career as to one selection week in, week out.
Do you think there's any element? I know one of the journalists asked Andy Farrell if he felt there was any sense that he might have put Sam into the spotlight too early. And he said, no regrets. Would you think he could have used a few more years developing away from the spotlight, or do you think he was, he was good enough, it was his time?
Oh, I'm a firm believer if you're good enough, you're old enough. And I think we perhaps got to get better at that in Ireland as well, in terms of giving those young players their opportunity. And from a wider public, to get in behind that and be excited about that, rather than the reaction we have now over a couple of players who are trying to find their way. But I really do think that the exposure that you can get at a young age, if you're good enough and you're on form, and when you're picked, there's a clear understanding as to why you're picked. Like, the coach comes up and say, you're being picked because I love the way you do X, Y, and Z. Let's see if you can do that out here. The game's going to be faster. They're going to come at you a bit quicker. You'll probably have less time to make decisions. But you're not going to learn to handle that unless you're in that environment. So out you go, give it a crack, and from here we'll go to the next level. Otherwise, players are kind of, they're going through training, they might be playing URC matches, and if they don't get exposure at the top level, then we'll never know if they're ready. And then all of a sudden they become 25, 26, and then they're thrown in and people are like, oh, he must be ready now, he's 25, 26, but he still hasn't experienced it.
Yeah.
So it's a very fine line, and you got to pick teams perhaps with more experience around them then, so that if they do have a rocky patch during the game, that someone can guide them through it. In general, I'd be like, yeah, if they're good enough, they're old enough, sort them in.
And we go to Twickenham next week, obviously, which Stuart McCluskey was talking in the post-match about just how hard of a task that is to go to Twickenham and to win. How do they, I suppose, prepare themselves for that challenge?
it's so much better to be preparing for it off the back of a win.
And yet
there'll be a frustration there that they didn't quite get everything right, and there'll be an excitement around the fact that they didn't quite get everything right in terms of this is another level we can get to. So that I think is hugely positive, that when you're making those adjustments or learnings off the back of a win, knowing that you left stuff out there. And again, this was a good Italy performance. It's a really tough Italy team. I probably underestimated them, to be honest with you. I know Razzy Erasmus was saying there were dark horses for this year's Six Nations, and I thought they're not quite there yet. Surely they haven't got the consistency. But that's two games in a row now that they fronted up and played really, really well. Like, Ireland had to play well to beat them. So they can take confidence from that as well. I just think, again, going to Twickenham, like, it's just a great place to try and put something special together. And back to the point again, all these big players being missing, players perhaps not at quite top level of their form. Like, if you were cooking something in the kitchen and you just threw all the ingredients into a pot and kind of left it there for next 18 months, I'm not sure it'd be kind of exciting to taste after 18 months. Whereas you get all these ingredients now and you keep stirring it and mixing it and adding a little bit of this and adding a little bit of that, and in 18 months' time, you might have something really cool. Like, you kind of go, I actually like the taste of that, and throw in some more of that. So I think there's an excitement about the possibilities of how all these players are being given opportunities now, and the new mix and the foundation, or the combinations that could fall out of that, I think can leave Ireland in a really good position going into a World Cup, where, again, we'll go back to the start, where we haven't had that in previous World Cups, where we didn't have the unknown around selection. So I think this weekend, again, is another massive opportunity for guys to keep on their trajectory towards being the first name on Andy Farrell's team sheet.
Would you make any changes, or would you foresee any changes from last week's Match Day 23?
I think there's an opportunity to stir up the mix again. I think Tadhg Furlong perhaps could be given an opportunity to come back in. He's missed so many games. He'll be better for that game against Italy. Ronan Keller, I think, deserves a start. Gibson Park, before going to the backs, I think Keane Prendergast, I think, could be brought back into 23. Tadhg Byrne again could be all the better for coming off the bench the last day. Josh van der Vlier again, wouldn't rate him out or rule him out of being involved in 23. I think Gibson Park will have to start. Jack Crowley, I think, will have to start. And I'd probably leave the rest of the back line intact. Again, just to allow them to build those combinations and a little bit more familiarity and confidence around those inside and outside them. But again, you're looking at maybe 5-6 changes there. And again, there's a freshness about that. There's an energy about that. And guys who are maybe on the bench will be full of confidence coming off the bench as well, on the back of Saturday's victory. So it'll be interesting to see what way he goes. But I do think there's opportunity for him to keep stirring it up and keep mixing it and keep the guys on their toes.
Okay, we're sheltering from the rain here at the Dexcom, but we were just chatting about England. Obviously, they lost to Scotland last weekend, so they're going to come out fighting as well. Do you think that's a good thing for Ireland that they lost, or do you think it might be a bad thing?
It'll be tough going to Twickenham at the best of times. This will double down England's intensity and ferocity, I'd imagine, from the start. It'll be interesting to see how England react to that, though, because I think they've been very rigid in their game plan. It's Steve Borthwick. That's the way he's coached, whether it was in Leicester or now with England. He plays percentages, kick from your own half, get a good line chase, contest it, big maul, big scrum. It'll be interesting to see if he just doubles down on that again, or does he change up a little bit and bring the back line into play a little bit more. It'll be fascinating to see, because I think that is England's weakness, their inability to change. Even when they were up against Wales by up to 20-30 points, 15 men against 13, and they kicked the ball away. They kicked it twice into touch when they had two men extra on the field, and it was just that willingness or the insistence on kicking the ball and chasing in order to get field position, in order to get possession up the field. And when they were 18 points down against Scotland, 17 points down against Scotland, they couldn't change. You know, like, George Ford jumped in to kick a drop goal at one stage, and they just
got blocked down,
and it's just that. That reluctance to perhaps change away from a game plan could be their weakness. And if Ireland can get any sort of platform and get ahead in the game, It'll be interesting to see how England react again. And all the pressure's on England this weekend. That's the beauty of it, though. At home, they will be expected to front up and to win this game. They were talking themselves up as not only the championship, but possible Grand Slam winners as well. So that's out the window. So I think this is a massive opportunity for Ireland to build on what they did against Italy, but also to really test England in terms of their game plan and their game style.
Yeah, they'll certainly, I'd say Ireland will be underdogs going over. What way do you see it going?
It's so hard to say. I think it's one of those weeks where you're dying to see the team sheet as well from both sides, because as Steve Borthwick go, okay, that didn't quite go to plan, but I backed this team and out you go again and prove the doubters wrong and show us what a good team you are. Or does he change it up? And then what does Andy Farrell do? How does he pick? Does he go 6-2 bench? Because that's probably where the game's going to be won and lost up front. So if Ireland can get parity up front, I think it'll go right down to the wire.
Okay, you don't have a score prediction for me then?
Score prediction, England 23. I'd love to say Ireland 24, but I think Ireland 21.
Okay. Close game either way.
Close game either way.
All right, well, thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.